Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, it's blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down on Almighty Baller Radio, part of Dash Radio. I'm Justin Rowan, my co-host Carter Rodriguez, coming off a Cavs big Game 4 win. They avoid getting swept by the Golden State Warriors and becoming a part of history. And they did it in blowout fashion. Carter, how are you feeling?
We said right before we started recording that we didn't realize how much we cared about a win until like the third quarter. I cared a lot. It felt so good.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to be, this team is so good, this Cavaliers team, and they were just getting so thoroughly outclassed, especially in games one and two, that it just didn't feel great to have them like reduced to a historical footnote.
Yeah, it would be brutal. And as the game progressed, like, as you said, I realized more and more how badly I wanted the team to win. I've been rather apathetic this finals, which has kind of caught me a little bit off guard. But just kind of the reality of how good this Warriors team is, it takes the wind out of your sails to some extent. But as this game progressed, I'm just sitting there. I'm like, if just some of these threes were spread across the last few games, we're sitting here with a 2-2 series and I mean, it would be setting up quite a spectacular finish, I think. Like, these games have been, at least the last three games, have been fairly close, or at least competitive. And it really does kind of go to show just how tiny the margin for error can be at times.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we kind of were discussing it. Going into the series, I had kind of said something along the lines of I thought the Cavs had to win. They were going to get blown out a couple times, and then they had to win all the games along the margins. And, I mean, I think game three is really going to haunt them. You lost one of the games on the margins, and all of a sudden what could be a 2-2 series, you know, was 3-0, and that feels still is obviously pretty insurmountable. I don't think either of us is, you know, ready to declare this a series. But, you know, I just think
absolutely.
Yeah. Like, I think that this is, you know, it's kind of what it looks like. I think it felt really good to get a win. I think, you know, it just shows you the price of variance. You know, the Cavaliers couldn't buy a three in game three, and they shot 24-45 tonight. I mean, and how about Kyrie Irving? I mean, miss me. Excuse me, I just burped. Miss me with the narrative that this dude isn't an amazing player. Like, he is.
I don't
care about his clock management.
Me.
Oh, he's so good.
One thing that's kind of startled me is just how people want to give up on players after, like, well, not even after a bad game, like, after a bad half. Like, in game one, I saw people calling to bench Korver for the rest of the series, and it's like, okay, no, he's going to eventually hit shots. Then it's, okay, we need to put Amon Shumpert out there instead of J.R. Smith because J.R. is not hitting shots, and at least Shump is less disastrous. It's like, well, no, J.R. actually has the potential to make a difference in the series. And for people to give up on Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, all these guys after they won a championship last season is just ridiculous. Like, it was a bad two games for a lot of these players, and it was nice for Tristan Thompson to finally show up in game four, as he's just kind of been awful. But this was a great team effort. It wasn't how I would have figured that this Cavs team would beat the Warriors, basically just going flat-out blitz all game. But, I mean, it was an impressive win and a reminder of just how good this offense, this team is offensively when they're not shooting 30% on open threes.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like that this is – I mean, everyone is played well in this game across the board. I mean, I think you have to be so impressed with Kevin Love so far in this series. I think he's been amazing. I think that Tristan finally had a pulse. Tristan had 5 assists tonight. I mean, they were forcing him to be a playmaker, and he did a really good job of it. JR has completely revitalized his game in the last 2 games, finding space for open threes. I think they've done a good job of having him slip a couple of these screens to find some open space. But overall, I mean, just everyone played really well tonight. I thought Richard Jefferson was amazing tonight in his 22 minutes. It's just really encouraging to see. I guess, Justin, to spin it forward, because obviously the Cavs played really well. The Warriors did not play really well. By the way, the Warriors only turned the ball over 12 times. They had 26 assists on 12 turnovers. Like, that is, I mean, that normally is you get killed, not you kill them. So that's pretty noteworthy there. But I guess, does this even, I don't think either of us would say that the Cavs are going to win this series, but given the success rate of the last 2 games, even though they obviously blew it late in game 3, do the Warriors feel any more vulnerable to you now?
I don't know if they feel any more vulnerable. Like, heading into this series, I think both of us had a complete understanding that the Warriors are the better team here, and that the Cavs' margin for error would be slight. And it kind of seems like it still is following that same formula. Like, it's a couple breaks here or there. The Cavs needed to have those breaks go their way in order to win, and that just simply didn't happen in games 2 or 3. I don't know if the Warriors are more vulnerable. I think it's just, once again, do the Cavs come out and execute next game? Do they get the breaks that they need to win in game 5? If they do, what type of pressure does that put on the Warriors? I don't think anything I've seen in these 4 games changes really how I feel about either of these teams. Like, the Cavs went in a shooting slump, and that affected them dramatically. The Warriors are just as good as we thought going in. I mean, I tweeted this on in response to Matt Moore, who was asking on Twitter, does tonight's game stop all the talk of the Warriors being the best team ever? And I kind of feel like, regardless of what happens in these finals, like, this is still the best team or the most talented team ever assembled. Like, I don't think anything changes here. Like, I think the Cavs are historically good as well. They're obviously a huge underdog, but for them to win a game here or to really extend this series, I don't think it's an indictment on the Warriors. And I don't think if the Warriors would have swept the Cavs tonight, I don't think it necessarily is an indictment on the Cavs.
Yeah, I think that... I don't know. I do. I kind of disagree. This is splitting hairs, but I do disagree on the idea that I think they kind of needed a sweep to just completely cement their GOAT status as a team, just because, you know, they didn't have the regular season success. Obviously, you know, it's all subjective, and no one really has a hard take one way or the other. I think that to some extent it changes my opinion. I guess going into this finals, the line I kind of said over and over again was it can be competitive, it just can't be a wash. It can't be the Warriors are just so clearly better. And they might still just so clearly be untouchably better, but when you consider that this could easily be a 2-2 series, it just feels a little less hopeless in the long term. But, you know, I mean, that's why you don't overreact after 1 or 2 games, and that's why what we do on Twitter every day is pretty stupid. But, I mean...
most of what we do is
stupid. To some extent, I mean, the Cavs, I mean, they got some breaks here. The Durant and Curry went 4 of 18 in this game.
Elimination game, Steph.
Yeah, Steph was not good in this game at all. He had 14, 10, and 4. Tristan Thompson finally out-rebounded him in a game, which was nice. But I just thought, you know, it just doesn't, it feels like the Cavaliers are at least figuring some stuff out on the offensive end after two pretty brutal games where they were pushing the pace like crazy, but were not scoring efficiently at all. Because, I mean, game three, if they just hit some open threes, then their offensive numbers look a lot different.
Yeah, true.
Can I take a time to whine about something very insignificant?
You whine can you hear all me? The time about insignificant shit on this podcast. Why would today be any different?
That's an excellent point, so I'm going to take that as permission to go ahead. So, yeah, we get it. The Cavs aren't very good when LeBron sits. We know. Everyone knows it's okay. But there were two possessions each to start, I think, the fourth quarter. The Cavs missed a layup and I think got turned over. Warriors hit a three, and then Klay Thompson hit one of the most ridiculous, out of rhythm, super contested, not even off the dribble threes that I've ever seen. And everyone goes, "Wow, look, Cavs can't survive without LeBron." And it's like, well, sure, that's probably true, but this isn't a good example of that.
No.
Like, just because a couple possessions go wonky doesn't mean, like, it was just such an overreaction and it annoyed me.
I want to shout out Ziggy, one of my favorite members of Cavs Twitter. He tweeted, "The Cavs falling apart has less to do with LeBron being off court than it does with Deron Williams being on court." I love that Deron has become the new Delly for so many people. Well, both Williams, because people, for some inexplicable reason, were calling for Derek Williams for the last day and a bit. And what on earth, man?
Yeah, I mean, I get he kind of got, like, the short shrift, like, this season. He was playing pretty well to start off when he got signed. And then they signed Deron, so he kind of got bumped out of the rotation. But, like if you were paying attention, he kind of had tailed off before that. He was not the lineup wrecking force that he was in the first like three games with the Cavs. Like, he had definitely tailed off. He wasn't getting any layups anymore. He was making a lot of defensive mistakes. He was pulling from three way too much. Like, this dude is not like a superstar, guys. Like, I get it. He's a tall human, but why are you so into this idea? I don't understand. God, he's our new Quinn Cook.
Man, that there's a throwback name. Why a throwback are we
from
about
the
Quinn
beginning
Cook?
Of this season? Like, people were just obsessed with the Cavs signing, like, this guy who's never played in the NBA, and like, then he got signed with the Mavs and he was fine, but like, whatever. Yeah, I don't know. People are just, I think people think coaching is a lot easier than it is, so they just think like, oh, you just got to plug in this guy and it'll be great.
Yeah,
and that is not how coaching works. Breaking news.
No, it's not. And I mean, I'm still a little uncomfortable with this pace. I thought the Cavs in the second half of game three, out of exhaustion, they slowed the game down. But I thought it was effective. I thought they got shots that they wanted in the half court. I thought it took the Warriors out of their rhythm. And if they just would have hit a few open shots, then it would have been a totally different ball game. But I think the pace that they had been playing up leading up to that half, that kind of contributed to missing those open shots.
What if I told you that today's game was played at a pace of 96.1?
Are you serious?
Yep.
Well, I mean, the first half felt slower, but that, man, that feels wild.
Yeah, I have this theory that no one actually knows what a fast or a slow game looks like, because pace numbers never line up with what people expect.
I think
like single game
knows
pace
shit.
Numbers.
I think that's just
I honestly because it did feel fast at times. Like, the Cavs did pick their spots. The Warriors only had 9 fast break points. The Cavs only had 8.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the pace tends to feel faster than it is when shots are going in. So I mean, the Cavs put up. What do you think the Cavs' offensive rating in this game was?
142.
142.6.
Oh my
That's
god,
unbelievably
what a
close.
What a
That's
get.
Crazy.
Okay, I'm in a zone right now.
Yeah, we should just turn off the pod right now.
Shut it down.
Yeah, 68% true shooting percentage. Yeah, I mean, if you're giving up 120 points per 100 possessions and you still win by 21 points, that just shows how prolific their offense was. I mean, you know what's kind of crazy about Kyrie? And this is exactly what happened last year, really. And I think this is another thing where we like to kind of pretend it went differently than it did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are the shots he's getting that qualitatively different than the ones he got in games 1 and 2?
No. No, the only thing I'd say he's done different than games 1 and 2 is he's reacted a little quicker ahead of time to the trap. And that has stopped the Warriors from trapping him so aggressively. Like, he's still getting a ton of isolation shots, and Clay's still doing a pretty good job on him. But at the same time, like, him giving up the ball prior to the trap, like, fully forming, I think that's made the Warriors a little more hesitant. That's, like, the only... That's the main difference I see. Whereas games 1 and 2 of last year, I thought there was a lot of nerves with him. He wasn't really used to what the Warriors were throwing at him, which I guess is similar to this year too, but they obviously weren't trapping like they did this year. But yeah, overall, it's just kind of Kyrie's hitting shots. He's in rhythm now.
I mean, some of those lefty floaters he was hitting were just so absurd. And I mean, I think that is just like part of what you have to do against the Warriors is just hit really hard shots.
Yeah.
And Kyrie's, I mean, probably in the 97th or 98th percentile of tough shot makers, like, if he's not just right at 100. and it's just so rewarding to watch him kind of find his way. It's a bummer that we didn't get this. I mean, game 3, they have to really be kicking themselves for it.
Ugh, that's going to hurt for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I think game 3 feels so much worse now than it did
yeah.
when it happened.
100%.
And that's a real indicator of how bad it feels now.
Yeah.
Because, man, was it a bummer on Wednesday night.
Like,
and yet it still like feels even more disastrous.
Again, as I said, I've felt strangely apathetic. Like, maybe a half hour after game 3, like, I was kind of at peace with it. And it's like, you know what? Life goes on. We got a ring last year. Like, I was in a pretty good mood. Whatever. I'm at peace with it.
Yeah, I had fully moved on to shit-talking people mode.
Yeah.
Like, as a COVID
mechanism. Know, you go back to having fun or whatever. Like, it is what it is. But, like, now I'm really dwelling on game 3. And it stings so badly. But let's circle back to Kyrie. Because, my God.
Yeah, sorry.
Like, Kyrie now, he's had 4 elimination games in his career. He scored over 40 points in 2 of those games. And not to mention, they've all been in the NBA Finals against what many people have considered the best and second best teams of this era, like, or that have been put together. Like, it's a little bit impressive what he's doing, and he just turned 25, like, under 2 months ago.
Yeah, and I think there's something worth noting. I think when Kyrie's at his worst, even when his shot's going, sometimes it feels like his shots exist outside of the flow of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that they operate on as an island. You know, because sometimes 2 points feels like more than 2 points, and his often feel like almost like half of that when it's not going right.
Yeah,
or he's not playing in the right rhythm. And then a game like tonight, the Warriors, I mean, this is a 21-point game that did not feel put away until there were about 3 minutes left. And there were so many stretches where the Warriors said, okay, we're within 12, and he would just come back and hit a dagger 3.
Yeah.
I mean, he hit that, you know, semi-transition trailer 3 off the dribble, and then hits that lefty floater over Clay, and it just and I mean, you know, we talked about in the first couple games all the times the Cavaliers would make their run and Durant just kind of, you know, wagged his finger and said no, and just hit a couple backbreakers and put the game back out of reach. That was Kyrie tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And
I think that he's the story of this game. I know LeBron was magnificent, but it just Kyrie just was such a backbreaker. I mean, he started this game 10 of 12 from the field. He is a 6'2", 6'3 point guard against one of the best defenses ever, and he went 10 of 12 from the field.
The Kyrie development is really interesting to me because I think this year we've talked about at times, I think overall he's shown a lot of growth as a passer and his game has really developed, and that's part of why his efficiency has shot up this year. I mean, obviously not coming off surgery helps, but also he sees the game better. I think there's still a tendency for him when his back's against the wall or when the Cavs are down or when it's a big game, he really kind of has that hero ball mentality. And luckily for the Cavs, he's like still deadly in those situations. Like, he has a lot of his biggest games in those situations and plays like a complete superstar. But I think the next level for him is to still maintain that edge while seeing the game better. Like, it's all going to come with maturity. And as I said, when Isaiah Thomas was the same age as Kyrie, there were two teams in his future that were going to give up on him before he got to where he is now. So for people to say, okay, well, now Cavs should trade Kyrie, and there were a lot of people, not just random people on Twitter, but they're writers and prominent people saying that the Cavs needed to move on from Kyrie after game three. And it just seems ridiculous to me. Like,
NBA Twitter loves two for ones.
Oh, they
loves them.
They love two for ones. They love four for ones when it's crap pieces from the Detroit Pistons. There's all types of combinations that people go apeshit over. But like,
all of them would screw the Caps, whether it's on the basketball court or a trade.
And I think a big part of this too that people are overlooking. I don't really care if you don't trust Kyrie. But LeBron does. LeBron openly believes in him and has been mentoring him and has talked about passing the torch on to him. And he's not going to say that about just anybody. And he's certainly not going to say that just as lip service. Like, if he envisions himself passing on the torch to somebody before his playing days are over, which he has said, I think that's someone that is A, good, and B, someone that he believes in.
Yeah, I mean, he said something along the lines of after Kyrie's big game against the Celtics, where he said, like, you know, if we ever aren't playing together, it won't be because of me. Like, it won't be my decision.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but he's such a good finisher. He's such a good compliment for LeBron. And, you know, I don't know if he was banged up or if his knee's still hurting. And this is why I kind of hesitated to you know, use it as an excuse after games one and two. Because, I mean, clearly he can play through pain and play really, really well. And I think he proves that tonight. He blows up a lot of narratives in moments like this because you realize almost nobody else has games like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet if you looked at the list of multiple 40-point playoff performances in NBA Finals history, it would be some pretty interesting company. And I don't think it'd be a long list.
No, not at all. Well, he's his what was it, 28 points in the first half? Or, yeah.
25, I believe.
No.
Somewhere in there. I think it was a lot. Yeah. The point is a lot.
It was too short of Allen Iverson's finals record. So Kyrie is second all time for finals points and a half. That's not bad. It's just ridiculous. Like, it's nights like tonight that I was kind of coming at peace, coming to terms with this team needing to retool and all that, and winning is obviously still a long shot. They'd have to once again do something that's unprecedented. Not only is it a bigger deficit than last year, but it's against a better Warriors team with Kevin Durant. But I mean, I love this team. Like, this is the team that delivered Cleveland its first championship in ages. It's such a likable group of players, and I just wish we would have got a better effort from them, from the players to the coaching staff, everyone in those first three games.
So I went ahead and did some looking up while you said that. There are only 7 players with at least 2 40-point games in NBA Finals history. Jerry West had 8, which is ridiculous.
A finals choker like LeBron.
Yeah. Jordan had 6. James had 5. O'Neal had 5. Rick Barry had 3. Havlicek had 2. And Wade had 2.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's a pretty ridiculous company.
Yeah, and I looked it up. In the last 20 finals, the most points scored in a half, 30 from Iverson, 28 from Kyrie.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus.
On 14 shots.
He was so good. If I may, because we absolutely should have led the show with this, but we were just too caught up in our post, the post-win.
Draymond stuff.
Good vibes. What the hell happened with Draymond?
You know what? I'm not even mad about it, because if Draymond was ejected from that game, we're going to have, the Cavs only won because Draymond was ejected. They reached out to Kiki, blah, 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 blah. LeBron was texting from the bench, all that crap. And, like, Draymond shouldn't have been given a tech for that. That's the one tech he got, apparently. It was ridiculous to see them manipulate the game. And history.
Why wouldn't you just go back and give it to, if you're gonna, so, okay, I just want to discuss, let's just dive in conspiracy theory before we discuss the repercussions. So they absolutely meant to give him a technical, the first one and the second one, but then realized that you can't toss him for such a crappy reason and retroactively applied that technical to Kerr. Am I wrong?
No. No, you're not.
That's so funny. Why wouldn't you just find a different scapegoat in the moment right then? Like, oh my God, that ref has got to be getting like dressed down. What are you doing giving someone their second technical? But it's so funny because like it's such an NBA move. Like almost any other league would be like, hey, you know, it's the call we made, so, you know, it's regrettable, but, you know, it's the one we made. NBA's like, nope, we gotta fix this. How are we gonna do this? Let's huddle up for 30 minutes and
oh my God, Draymond
redistribute
just had such
past
a good
technicals.
Quote.
What did he say?
Thank God I get to play on Monday, hopefully. Can I just say, as much as I despise this Warriors team, I get a kick out of Draymond?
I mean, he's such a, like, I work as a producer at a sports network. So a big part of my job is to find talking points to beat into the ground. And, man, are his post-game pressers just like – they're just a treasure trove. Like, you can pull, like, 6 segments out of every Draymond post-game presser. He's so candid. He's unfortunately funny. And, like, he just does a really good job of, like – people ask why pressers exist, and like, he is the reason, because you get interesting stuff from him regularly.
Man, it's pretty weird that Steph Curry took a shit on the Cavs floor for 2 straight games.
They have the weirdest game plans with him sometimes. I mean, he had 13 shots.
Your boy Kerr's back.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, what? Why? Like, they barely gave him the ball. I mean, it was, like, not... I mean, people are just going to say he played bad, but he didn't even have the ball in his hands.
Yeah, that...
Like, more often than not, right?
That's baffling to me. And, I mean, they did so many weird things in this game. Like, they were posting up David West. Okay, you know what? I should honestly just cut it off there, because that's the weirdest thing you can do in an NBA Finals game when Kevin Durant's on the court, is post up David West.
Yeah, they did a lot of weird stuff. I mean, Livingston took a ton of fadeaways today. I know that's kind of his shot, but it was like they kind of were like going out of their way to give them to him. I don't know. It was, I mean, he was 5 of 7, so he had a nice game, but it was just like, the shots were coming from weird spots on the floor for them. I mean, Draymond had 16 attempts. How often does Draymond Green have 16 attempts for them?
I don't know, but I'm sure Kerr was very happy with that.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, Clay only had 11 attempts.
I think the strategy going into game five is leave Draymond wide open so he takes enough shots that Kerr tackles him from the bench.
It would certainly be a good, some good video. it was just a weird game for them. And maybe it was just a matter of they lost focus and they're going to go out and just beat the piss out of them in game five back in Oakland.
Another Draymond quote. I don't pay attention to people in Cleveland, honestly. They don't seem like the smartest people.
Man. Like, this is why
if they win
really,
game five, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I am so invested in this rivalry. I like, you know, you go through these things where it's like, okay, like, I really want LeBron to, you know, win to secure his legacy, or, you know, I'm not as me focused with this finals, because like I already got my like crowning jewel of a sporting moment, which was, you know, the title last year.
Oh yeah.
So like I'm more focused about, you know, the players and their legacies, but like my selfish hope this year is, you know, my selfish motivation is I just want this to be the best rivalry ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, for sure. Yeah. Like we're getting a couple more rounds of this. And I think you're right. This rivalry,
but it's not a great rivalry if it's not close. If the Warriors win, you know, a huge disproportionate amount of these series.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So it's I'm so invested in it because of moments like that. Like, once again, if somehow they can get this sucker back to Cleveland, Draymond is going to hear it like he's never heard it before.
Oh man, I'm so excited about this now. Like, I know it's just leading to probably a letdown on Monday, and it's going to hurt. But it is.
If you think about it, there's nothing more Cavsy than this, than getting everyone back in for just one more time to break our hearts.
Man, there's so many whack people on Twitter. All right.
Let's call them out. Let's do it.
New segment on the Chase Down called Scrolling Through Tweet Deck. Brandon Anderson adds, LeBron, Elgin Baylor, and Jerry West are LeBron's heroes because he joined them for LeBron and Kyrie joined Elgin Baylor and Jerry West as the only duo with 30-plus points in four more finals games as teammates. Wow.
Yeah, I don't like stats like that. I'll say it.
I dig
That's
it.
A deep cut stat.
I dig it when it's complimentary.
That exists only for statisticians. That's fair. Anyway, you know we're going off the rails.
It's 12 a.m.
It's late. I mean, it's 1 a.m.
We
should probably stop
talking. Are
you on
West Coast time or East Coast time right now?
Well,
look at you go. You're not in the Lord's time zone.
I'm still at my parents' house, so yeah. Trust me. I mean, you know how I feel about this. I still want to try. I'm like a drug user, and I'm like in withdrawal right now. I can't stay up this late. For sports, I need them. I need them early. I mean, I still want to dabble in Mountain Time
Central
someday.
Is
but
a gateway
that's
drug
another discussion for another day. I hear it's lovely.
Yeah. Then you just become
and then Pacific
an obnoxious
Time's like
douche
with
the superiority complex. Shout out Warriors Twitter.
Then you're waking up at like 9 for an NFL game.
Anyways, this has gone exactly the direction I wanted this to go. But
sounds
so
bad.
In summary, anyway. Kyrie Irving, very good. LeBron James, very good. Tristan Thompson, thanks for showing up. J.R. Smith, you too. Although J.R. was good for both games, I think. But hopefully momentum happens, man. I'm down with this. Like, I think the Cavs got confidence. They play better when they're in these ridiculous situations. And my God, do I hate that it happens. But, I mean, they played noticeably harder this game than they did in the first 2.5 games. I think that's fair to say.
Yep. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you're just a lot.
Yeah.
Focused effort looks a lot stronger than unfocused effort. Like being confident and decisive goes a long way there. And I think they knew what the hell they were doing in these two, yep. these two games.
That's,
so it looks a lot better.
That's about all she wrote. So thank you to our listeners. Hopefully the Cavs send this to six games because that would be awesome. But we'll have a reaction after game five. We'll record on Tuesday. So we appreciate all your support, the reviews, which you should be leaving. If you're handsome or if you're sexy, I mean, actually, both genders, you can be handsome or sexy. You know what? This is late. This is, you know what? But I'm just riding this train of thought right now. But yeah, leave us a review. Do it.
Yeah, leave a review. That is the short end, is please leave a review. But there's no way you've made it to this part to say this because Justin has lulled you to sleep, potentially at the wheel. If anyone wrecks their car from that plug from
Magic
Justin,
Johnson is always
I think
positive.
You can legally
he just tweeted
seek
out.
Damages.
Sorry. Congratulations to LeBron James for becoming the king of triple-doubles in the NBA Finals with 9 and breaking my record. And I could not avoid that pun if I tried.
Aw.
Good night, folks. Go Cavs.
All right. Bye, guys.